It is a busy time of the week on WFSK. You all know that our regular listeners, that the Artist of the Week spotlight is one that gives us an opportunity to drill down on a new release with an artist that recording artists, producers, songwriters, etc. And this is his first time in our WFSK spotlight. And I want to welcome to be with us today, guitarist Steve Laurie. Steve, how in the world are you? And thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, I'm doing well. I hope you're doing well. And yeah, it's a pleasure.
I am. I'm doing great.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, definitely. And those of you who were like, well, I wonder what happened to such and such, and I wonder where they've been and all that. Well, that's why he's here with us to have that discussion, as well as catch us up on things and find out about his new release, etc. And because of your new release, I was able to connect with you. And as I look back through the music, I'll always like to see, you know, who's doing what, and when people come back after a long time. When you did Keeping the Faith, you know, it was just a while before we heard anything from you again. So, number one, have you been okay?
Yeah, Keeping the Faith, during that period of time, I went to stage 4 T-cell lymphoma.
Mm.
And I wasn't supposed to make it.
Hmm.
So that was a rough time. I was on two different very heavy regimens of chemotherapy.
Mm.
And there was a break in between Keeping the Faith and I believe it was Violent Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on CTI.
Hmm.
But, yeah, that's probably why. And then, you know, with the industry changing like it has, all the record companies now have, they're gone. The Tower Records that used to be on every corner, and Sam Goody's, that's all gone now, too. So it's the whole environment of making music now is completely different.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll talk about that later on. Now we find ourselves in a place where we have to produce our own music,
yeah,
and we have to, you know, finance our own music.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
So you have the streaming thing going on, like with YouTube, and I think what people don't realize is if someone else posts my music up on YouTube, then I get paid absolutely nothing.
Right.
And it's the same with all artists. So it's a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon, same thing. Amazon, if you're an Amazon Prime member, you can stream anybody's music, but I know for me, I haven't received any money from them. And they're so big and so powerful, these corporations, that we can't litigate against them.
Right,
so
right.
Everything is, the landscape has really changed.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Well, let me ask then, because we pay five companies for rights to play music, by the way. And Sound,
thank you.
You're welcome. And Sound
thank
Exchange,
you.
And we're nonprofit. Sound Exchange is one of the ones for streaming. So you mean that wouldn't come back to you all? I thought that was the purpose of them collecting the money.
Sound Exchange is a great company, by the way.
Mm.
I mean, they have really come through for me. They're kind of saving my bacon right now, so to speak. But, I mean, you know, streaming like Spotify and Pandora, you do get paid, but, and I don't have the exact figure in front of me, but it's like 0.0000365. It's such a tiny, minuscule fraction of a penny. And it is not the statutory rate that was set by law to pay us when, you know, we used to get a lot of radio airplay, radio airplay.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I'll just give you an example. If you get a million plays, you're probably only get a check for maybe, I don't know, $50, $60.
Mm, wow.
And it's a big difference from, and I think the way that they got around the law was they don't consider it a play. They call it either a stream or they mm-hmm. call it a view, like mm-hmm. on YouTube. It's a view.
Right.
And I just hope that they get that straightened out. I mean, I think YouTube, if they were paying us what we deserve
sure.
as artists, it's good, you know? But the way that it's set up right now, it's and believe me, I'm not the only one.
No, everybody says the same thing every week.
Yeah.
So it's across the board with everybody.
Exactly.
Well, and knowing that that's the case, it just would seem like such a multi-billion-dollar industry would, you know, break off some people, you know, like literally, because we certainly have to pay media outlets like us. You know, we're nonprofit and we pay the special nonprofit rates, but you better believe we got to pay all those people, and the stations that are for profit, they do likewise. And it just seems as though anything online seems to be very well protected. And those folks don't have to share in the responsibility like the rest of us have.
Right, right. And I think it's because you're still a traditional radio station.
Yep.
You're probably getting your signals off of the satellite.
No, we make our own signals here.
You make
we,
your own
signals? Yeah, we are.
Yeah, I mean,
we
that's
are.
Very traditional. No, I wish everything was like that. So,
we are a
licensed
in this, like federal license. We're a real radio station. We're not a streaming service. We are what a radio was intended to be. And but we stream for people who want to hear it. They don't contribute. So I get it. I get it more than any of y'all have any idea, but we offer this service, and we're nonprofit, and people just sit and enjoy it, and it's like that, and that's the way it is. And we just don't have, you know, like the rest of you all, you know, we don't have any strength, because everybody in the media goes through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, what internet and streaming has done to all of us, we're glad to still be standing. I don't know about the and I'm sure you are as well.
Oh, yeah, you know, and I think that there still are, there's enough people out there, once they know what's really going
mm-hmm.
on, they're concerned, you know, and they want to do something. I mean, I know I have a lot of fans that they buy my music on Apple Music. That's where I have it, you know, for downloads. Because really, I mean, today nobody wants to buy a hard copy CD.
Hmm.
So everything has gone digital, but at least they're still purchasing it. So,
yeah.
I mean, people do care.
Yeah, well, some people want to buy them, so that's not true. And to be honest with you, the download thing is overrated. You know, because you can never find your stuff. When your device gets full, then you forget you had it, and then you wasted your money, and you got to keep feeding the animal. And what about if you just want to hear some music, okay?
No, look, I started recording. I was doing LPs back in the day, I mean, before CDs, and that whole era those were great times.
When
we switched to CD, we were pretty happy about that, because that was an actual clone of the master recording.
Yeah.
And when you go from your master tape and you go to pressing LPs,
mm-hmm.
you lose a generation.
Mm-hmm.
So we were pretty happy. But, you know, the whole CD thing with the internet just kind of went in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
It's complicated. I mean, record companies had a technology where they would encrypt the CDs, and you could play them on a computer. You could play them on any device, but you couldn't download them on a hard drive. Therefore, you weren't able to share. You weren't able to convert to an MP3. So that would have eliminated streaming, at least with the new CDs. But for some reason, they didn't go with that technology. And then, I mean, as we know, one by one, huge artists were getting dropped over at Warner Brothers. I'm not going to mention any names, but these were people that were selling millions and millions of records. And you know, when they're getting dropped, things are not looking good.
That's true.
Yeah.
So during that time that, you know, because there's some original old school contemporary jazz lovers, etc., will remember the group Fatburger. And that was back in the days, and everybody knows those days. And you are the original guitarist with Fatburger. So during that time, you know, you always wonder, everybody always wonders what happened to such and such and such and such. Well, I have Steve Laurie with me from, you're the co-founder of Fatburger, aren't you?
Well, I can tell you the story of how that whole thing was together. I'll try and abbreviate it.
Okay.
What happened was, you know, I was living in my car in New Jersey, doing really bad. You know, I just had, things were not going well at all. My mother had passed away, and I had no place to live, so I had an old Chevy station wagon, a 1967, and I was living in that. And I'll tell you what, in New Jersey, it's not fun sleeping in a car in December. It's very cold. But, you know, I came to a crossroads, and it was just, if I stay in New Jersey, it didn't look good for me. And then I was playing, you know, some gigs between South Jersey and North Jersey, and these people came in and heard me play, and they said, you got to get out to California because that's where everything's happening. And, you know, you're playing, you're going to be really, they're really going to love the way you play out there. So, you know, I had like $100, my guitar, my amplifier, and we drove a Ford Pinto out there. And so when I got out, are you there, Sharon?
Yes, I am. I didn't want to interrupt the story.
You know, I asked because I had the phone problems in the past.
Oh, okay. Because I came to Nashville. You know, Steve, I came to Nashville in a Ford Pinto. So I had to not laugh out loud.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm there. I'm right there with you. Go ahead and tell it.
Yeah, so it was really either do or die for me. I was very depressed. I was getting, you know, caught up in drugs, which wasn't good. And, you know, when these people came in and offered me the, you know, the opportunity to go out to California, I just took them up on it. And when I got out there, I started playing in cover bands. I worked immediately. As a matter of fact, the first several bands that I went out, they had a paper called The Reader. And I would go into that paper. And once I bought a car, I finally saved up my money, and I bought a car for $350 in California. I was able to drive into the northern part of San Diego where all the clubs were. And wouldn't you know, like the third band that I sat in with had Nathan East on bass and Carl Evans on keyboards. And when I played with them, we gelled. Really, really. I mean, they were just, they loved my playing. I loved their playing. And we became very close friends. Nathan went on to Los Angeles and played with everybody. But Carl and I, we stayed in San Diego, and we played a lot of bands together. And then Carl one day called me up, and he said, I got this band here, which was, primarily, the players, it was Hollis Gentry on saxophone, the original guys in Fatburger, and he said, you know, we want to add a guitar player. And they asked me. And so I said yes. And we started playing between San Diego and Los Angeles, and I guess some people from Capitol Records came in, and they just loved our sound, and we got signed. With, I think at that time it was an olive branch of Capitol Records called Enigma. And, yeah, those were, that was probably one of the best decades of my life. I mean, there was just so much good music. so many people to learn from. I mean, I learned a lot from Carl and Hollis Gentry, who, you know, they both passed away. But they were such fantastic musicians, you know, and I was learning from Nathan East, another great musician. And for me, this kid from New Jersey, you know, all of a sudden I'm surrounded by these, you know, great musicians. And, yeah, it was really, really a good time, and I just learned. I mean, I never was a – I didn't study. But I just would learn right on the bandstand. And and then from that point on, I think I did five records with Fatburger. I think the last record I did with Fatburger was Come and Get It. And then I went off and decided to go solo. And I signed with Denon A&M at that point. Fatburger was a good experience.
Yeah, it was. And so as the experience, you felt like, you know, being with the group, and, you know, the group was hot and stuff. And, you know, you had talked earlier about how things have changed. What time frame would you say the greatest change came? Was it with the changing of the genre to people parsing it out into ridiculousness? Or, that's just purely my opinion,
I agree with you.
Well, it's just was filtered down to foolishness.
That's
and it just filtered itself out of business. I'm like, whose idea was that? Or, was it because the industry, the technology piece, because that was in the 90s, in the mid to late 90s when, you know, we were just getting our first gadgets and really thinking that we could conquer the world. What do you think during that time frame when you went left Fatburger and you were on your own and doing your own thing?
Yeah, it was kind of a 1-2 punch, because I remember when Napster came out, and we were really alarmed about that. We didn't know what direction that was going to go in. So that's when, you know, when the whole threat of free downloading came in. But also, what you were talking about before, the two words that I don't like to say very often, smooth jazz, when that came in, and BA came in and basically started programming all the national radio stations from the West Coast to the East Coast. So if you're in Chicago and you're listening to their smooth jazz station, you're going to hear the same playlist that's being played down in Miami or, you know, L.A. And, you know, they would select about 25 artists, really, and they would get all the airplay. And it was, you know, frankly, and this is my opinion, it was very watered down.
Oh, yes.
And and that happened in the 90s, you're right. In the 1980s, it was wide open.
I mean,
it was like a new frontier, and you had bands like the Yellow Jackets, which we became very good friends with, especially Ricky Lawson. He produced the Good News record and played in George Duke's studio in Woodland Hills. And Ricky played drums, and there was just so much going on. You had Steps Ahead with Michael Brecker, who he passed away, one of the great tenor saxophone player. There just was so every time I turn around, one of the reasons why I didn't move to Los Angeles, because that's originally where I wanted to go. There were just so many good guitar players up there that I was intimidated, you know? I went up there, and I started hearing all these guitar players at these jam sessions, and I just said, boy, I don't think I'm ready for this, you know? So I went back down to my little San Diego, and I, you know, I settled in there, and then, you know, we put the Fatburger band together, and I realized, look, you know, you're never going to be the best guitar player, but you can develop your own sound, and that's what's very, very important. So when someone hears your music, they can pick you out of a crowd.
Right.
And that's really what I worked on with my composition.
Yeah.
and playing the octaves, you know, the actual sound of my guitar. So when you hear my music, you go, oh, wait a minute, that's Steve Laurie.
Right, right.
But the 1980s was just wide open. It was looking so positive. Mm-hmm. I mean, every time you would, you know, turn on the radio, you'd hear another band that's just smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Great musicians. You go, where do these guys come from?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And then when the whole thing, the format changed over to the smooth jazz, they're telling us, well, we want your song to only be 3 minutes or less.
Right.
And the next thing you know, I don't have anything against Billy Joel, okay? But he's not supposed to be on the station with my genre of music, mm-hmm. you know? They started putting Billy Joel in there and just pop music.
Yeah, yeah.
They started mixing it all up, and yeah, that really, I think, was... What I think that did was it just chased a lot of the audience away. A lot of people just said, no, wait a minute. You know, I wanted to hear all that great fusion, jazz fusion that was coming out, you know, in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden it just became so pasteurized.
Oh, it did.
Homogenized. And
mm-hmm. It was so pure.
That's what I call it.
Well, it was so pure. It was just, you know... It was like milk toast. I'm like, this is so boring, and you know,
exactly. And
people were bored with it, and they knew it. It was like it had become musical wallpaper, and
right.
You know, let's not offend, and so you know, to be honest, maybe one day. Well, no, I'm saying right now for us, but I couldn't take it. Myself, and I feel grateful. I just feel immensely grateful to get to do the music at this station. You know, I run it, but I get to, you know, I made the choice. I didn't trust anybody else, not saying I'm the greatest, but I knew, I saw this thing collapse and burn, and it was like devastating. And because this has always been my go-to music, because it was mixed in, you know, with some of my faves from back in the day, like Luther and Teddy Pendergrass.
Luther Vandross?
Yes, Lord.
My God.
I know. I know. I know. I know.
Now, look, you know what? You could play him along, you know,
yeah.
In my genre. Okay. Yeah, I love him.
But here's what I saw was going on. When the decisions were made, they were made by, as people were selecting their formats and their music and not to let the gravy touch the biscuit and all this stuff, that it took the soul, it took the hot sauce off of it. I mean, it just took the life out of it and made it just so boring that even boring people didn't like it anymore. So when I saw that, you know, and I said that could actually happen here if I let it, and I just was really paying attention to a lot of things, and everybody's interpretation of music is different. But I was trying to just come up with something that would keep the audience, make the jazz people happy, make the smoothies and the contempos happy, you know, the straight aheads, because everybody was so parched. You know, I've been here since 05 and doing this thing at the station, and, you know, people were very parched and very, some of them didn't like me because they said I was, I ain't know nothing about jazz and blah, 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 and I mean, it was just crazy, and I'm like, look, y'all, this music is not supposed to make you like this. This music is not supposed to make you be mad, you know, as you...
supposed to make you feel good.
Yeah! I'm like, what is wrong with this picture? And, you know, so anyway, having taken the risk, it, you know, the station is stronger than it's ever been. We clearly have a winning formula. Clearly, because other stations across the country are copying it left and right. They
good.
Just think I don't know it. But I'm awake. And it just has to, in order for one audience to feed the next one, because the smoothies learn the contempos, learn the straight aheads, and straight aheads learn. So it's going to take our village, our jazz village, for us to survive. There's not so many.
And when you're talking about all these different styles of music, you talk about straight ahead. Of course, I played a lot of straight ahead, and I did my study with straight ahead. But, you know, in the 1980s, I used to call it hybrid music. I mean, because, you know, no, it wasn't straight ahead. But, you know, we were using changes that we got from, you know, the greats.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of changes from a lot of formulas that were used in
sure.
straight ahead music. And
yeah.
then, you know, I love Latin music. Particularly, I love Brazilian music.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got that, you put that in the mix.
Right.
And before you put all these different styles of music in.
Yes.
Together, and you have basically a hybrid. And I think when the smooth jazz thing came in with BA,
yeah.
Broadcast Architecture, they were telling us, you know, have your songs be less than 3 minutes.
And yeah, I'm sure.
They really just tried to really commercialize it.
Yes.
It backfired.
Yeah.
Because what happened was they lost the audience.
Yeah, because people were bored to tears.
One by one, all the songs just went out.
Right. They were bored to tears. They didn't want to hear another version of, you know, the Milquetoast Waltz. They just didn't want to hear it. And,
right.
You know, to me it was kind of dumb because it killed the audience. The audience, you know, that's what builds up your station. And, you know, you can't sell tickets and you can't have a venue and you can't sell music and if there's nobody there to buy it. So he's like, duh. It was so pure. And, you know, in my mind, I thought it was like, we don't want this greasy stuff here. This funky, greasy, bassy. We just don't want it. And that was hard on a lot of you guys. So I'm glad that.
Yeah, you know, and Sharon, when you write a piece of music, and you're in the studio, and you have your rhythm section in there.
Yeah.
And things are really flowing nice.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that could be a 10-minute song.
Right, right.
You're not sitting there with a stopwatch.
No,
you know?
No.
That really squashes all the creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're actually telling us, see, what they did was they took a hybrid style of music
yeah.
that was really just freedom for artists. You know, we were taking Brazilian and we were taking straight-ahead jazz.
Sure.
We were taking stuff with a lot of backbeats in it, you know, R&B, and mixing it all together. When they're
yeah.
telling you that you have to have it under 3 minutes,
right? It's hard to do.
You can't have this and it can't have that. Well,
yeah.
they're putting the handcuffs on.
Then basically,
you know?
Basically. Well, and you know that was to beat the to stay within the realm to get the commercials in. So because that's really
mm-hmm.
how, you know, that was the big corporate thing, you know, we could talk about this for the rest of the afternoon, because I
right.
spent 28 years in corporate media. I get it, and you know,
mm-hmm.
the stock market gets it, and you know, but anyway, Steve, I'm just glad to know that you're back and you're feeling good, and that you are putting out some new tracks, and I recently got wind of that. So I put several, two or three of them here in our rotation. And you know what? You sound so good, okay?
Thank you.
You sound
I'm
so good. Oh, definitely. Now tell the audience what it is that you have done. Because I guess you did, what, a EP or a downloadable
thing?
Yeah, they
call it extended play because... You know, to release 10, 11, 12 songs
yeah.
now, and people are not buying CDs like
mm-hmm.
they used to, it really
mm-hmm.
doesn't make sense for us. So
yeah.
it, we'll do the extended play. We'll do like 3 songs and release them out at one time.
Yeah.
Those songs can be purchased on my website, by the way.
Okay.
And they're, They're only in a download. They're on Apple Music, I believe, is what the link I have. Mm-hmm. That's stevelaurie.com. It's okay. Really easy to find.
Uh-huh.
And if somebody wants to contact me, too, there is a place for contact, and I get those emails. So they can contact me directly on it. But, I have a lot more. I mean, I have music that's finished.
Yeah.
And, Mike Carlson and I, we're really just looking at the landscape here. Yeah. We're trying to figure out, okay, how are we going to make this work for everybody?
Well, he was tickled to death when I told him I wanted to have you on. He's like, oh, yes.
He's a great guy. I mean, Mike worked my keeping the faith, passion, and stepping out. He got passion and keeping the faith to number one in R&R and... Mm-hmm. Back then we had Gavin, R&R, and MacPack.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I've known Mike for a really long time, and I think, you know, his company's called MC Promotion.
Right.
And we're probably going to try and get some seed money and just put our own little record company together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will be the first artist, of course.
Of course.
We've talked about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, as our responsibility here at the station, you know, we are a reporting station, and that was a process. And that means that everybody and their brother who is reputable in the business knows how to reach us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk, he and I either talk or email several times a week, and these are regular relationships with tons of people that are in the industry. And I was in particular, he sent me out, you know, the week stuff to listen to and look at, and I saw your name, and I was like, dude, man, where's this cat been? I hadn't seen or heard his name in a long time. So that's, you know, that's when he gave me the downloads to the cuts. And we've got in our collection up here now, Steve, we have Since We Met, One Summer Night, as well as Here to Stay.
Okay,
so those are the three that we have.
There's going to be more coming.
I know, but I'm just saying. Okay, we just want to let's set the runway in order.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, I have to wrap up because, you know, you're one of them cats I could probably talk to from now till sometime next week. And I know that on my time constraint, I can't do it. Now, Steve, for people to find out more about your history in this contemporary, smooth and contemporary jazz realm, your producing, and all the things that you have done in it, as well as being one of the original Fatburger members, is your website the very best place or what?
I think it's the easiest to find. Mm-hmm. I mean, all you got to really, I mean, if you Google just my name, Steve Laurie, I believe it's right up at the top.
Okay.
But if you were to put in the www.stevelaurie, no space between stevelaurie.com, it's going to come up too.
Yeah.
There's a contact page, there's a buy page. If they wanted to buy the songs that you're playing on the radio, they're there.
Okay.
You can get them right from there because it's a link that takes you right to Apple Music.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah. So it's all, it doesn't go through me, it goes through Apple Music, but it's all completely legitimate.
Okay. Sure.
And,
it's standard procedure.
I'm on social media too. I got a couple of Facebook pages. I had to open up another one because on the personal ones, I think they only allow 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
I hit the 5,000.
Oh,
so
great.
I opened up a Steve Laurie page too.
Okay.
And then I have a little industry page. And if anybody wanted to contact me, you know, if they're on Facebook, they can also do that.
Okay, super. Well, listen, I really, really appreciate your time and your talent and your willingness to share with us, because that's basically what this spotlight time does, is the drill down, you know, just to talk about the music and the people that are in it, because the consumer, our audience, These are things that they probably never thought about, never knew. So they can understand, you know, there's more than just y'all having fun in this industry. There's a lot that goes into this.
And it's gotten very, very complicated.
It has. Steve,
we create the music as an artist, but we're so far low on the totem pole when it comes to having any power. I mean, these corporations like Google, which is YouTube, and Spotify, they're just huge. Amazon, what a great name for them. Amazon is so big. They're so big.
That's true. That's true.
You know, it's become like the Wild West right now.
It has.
I'm just hoping that, you know, someone will step forward that has some, you know, power and put this all in, you know, the proper perspective where, you know, look, I just watered my plants this morning, and without sunlight and water, they're not going to live.
That's true.
And it's the same thing with music, you know?
Yeah.
To support an artist, they need to be paid for their work.
Absolutely.
Like a carpenter.
Yeah.
Or anybody else, that works for a living.
Well, and I truly believe, though, Steve, there's enough out here for everybody. If folks wouldn't be so dad blasted greedy. Because just like the artists want to get paid, well, we want to get paid, too, because we're playing it. And in order for us to pay our bills, you know, we want you to pay yours, but we want to pay ours because it costs money to operate this thing here. It's not free. So I get it. And now the consumer, the more we talk about it amongst ourselves and out to the abroad out here, I think the more people will get it because, you know, they know their internet and all that kind of stuff they have is not free. Y'all know you get those bills. And if you want to have a website and different things, you know you're paying for them if you want to have certain things. So, I mean, you know, that's real. We're not making it up. Anyway, Steve, I got to go. But I appreciate you so much. And I think that Lauri is Lauri when you're looking to look him up, and we just wish you on the very best. And please keep me posted on how things are going, would you?
Absolutely.
And whatever you're up to, you know, in terms of the music and all. Steve Lauri is this week's Jazzy 88 Artist of the Week, putting the spotlight on him and catching up with him after all these years. Steve, I'm so happy that I had a chance to chat with you. And, of course, as audience and listeners and supporters, we only wish you the very best.
Well, and God bless you all. God bless all of you down there in Nashville.